welcome to the Nagoromasen podcast. This is a recording of a panel that took place at Fanime 2009. The panel was called Carl Horn and Dark Horse Manga, and it happened on Sunday, May 24th, 2009.
Thank you very much for coming to the Dark Horse Manga panel. I'm going to start off by passing on around some of our most recent books that we have in the store right now. And this, as with all of our locations today, will be the back end of the panel. So, please, these are not family. Oh My God's Colors. This is a book that I thought would almost never come out, the reason I was editing it. And this is a special book to celebrate the Dark Horse edition celebrates the 30th volume of Oh My Goddess. Oh My Goddess, as you may know, has been running for 20 years in Japan and for 15 in the United States, and it's the longest running manga in English language. That is thanks, of course, to its readers. Special, very fancy volume with posters on the inside and a gold cover on the outside. Under Kosuke Fujishima's supervision, this is not clumsy American doing this, but Japanese. Four of the most beloved Oh My Goddess stories, short stories, were colorized, one for each of the first four goddesses. The part which actually took the longest was the text part back, which contains essays of goddesses and an extremely exhaustive encyclopedia cross-referencing all the last, you know, trivia bits about Oh My Goddess. This took a very long time. I wanted something that would be useful to both the old and new Oh My Goddess fan. By that I mean that for the first 11 years or so, Oh My Goddess was published in a block format. And we started publishing in unblock format in 2002. So it's all cross-reference, so whether you have the old edition or the new edition, you know, will be useful to you. This, of course, is Oh My Goddess itself, the latest volume, number 32 of our long-running series. And this is our first project with Clamp. Clamp probably needs no introduction. This is Clover. It's a very beautiful and tragic story, as Clamp is still doing. About a young girl who has been kept most of her life in a secret facility because she has a certain power and is too dangerous to go out. And is allowed to go out just one time with a handsome young special forces guy with a dark, tragic secret that actually links the two of them. So, this is our first project. This previously was available only in flop format, TokyoPop. We are releasing it for the first time unflop. And in addition, we have a bonus color section back, including many pieces that were not in the original version. Yes, it was actually it's a four volume series. So, Brock is in here. I heard that Clamp would like to pick up the series again and continue it someday, but that's been 10 years now. So basically, the story's finished. And I think they'll like this very much. We hope to do more projects with Clamp in the future. And it's been a very good experience working with them. As you might guess, they're highly professional people. Yeah, I really like it. It's a, the talent's kind of scary because I'm interested in experimental layout because I don't know how to draw. And so I kind of substitute with that. Make sure you get the sweat shining in the face. The press is against me. But what's scary is that Clamp is both good at layout and they can draw. So we get that combination in there. And I don't hate to say this, but I hate to say it, I'm a big Evangelion fan. But Clover came out around the time that Evangelion was out, and I almost think this influenced a little by Evangelion. I say that in its use of like editing, where they often will take a scene that was actually, you know, several chapters before, and then sort of show you a shot from that scene in a different perspective. So I really do like it. It's a again, a tragic story, but Clamp does it so well. So I'm going to pass these around, and please take a look at this.
Thank you.
these are examples of. These are examples of things I can show you which are already available in stores. I'll also be showing you stuff in printout form, which you can't yet get. But I hope you will. Now we come to the most exciting part of the entire panel. This is one where I robotically read off, you know, all three things we're going to be releasing between now and mid-October. I'm going to stop before Halloween because that's just too scary. And as we go through, I'll be showing you some of our other previews as well. Let's see. I think in stores right now, actually, as it came out this week, May 13th, was a series that I edited, Volume 9 of the First Hockey Corps Delivery Service. And I've got a preview of this right here. How many of you guys read First Hockey? Okay, that's very promising. For those of you who don't know, just like they have Bible colleges in America, they have Buddhist colleges in Japan. Most people who go to them in Japan are people whose families are involved in Buddhism in some way. They own a temple, or they own a Buddhist-themed funeral home. In other words, they're expecting to actually get a job in Buddhism after they graduate, but they have to get some credentials to join the family business. The other type of student who goes to these colleges are the type who can't get into any better school. And these are our heroes. There are five of them, and they're, you know, they're about to graduate, and they realize they have student loans and no prospect whatsoever of ever paying them back. They do have sort of spiritual powers, though. Most importantly, the ability to talk to corpses. Not to ghosts, corpses. So coming across a dead person in the woods, they've been there a little while, you know what I'm saying? Nevertheless, they dare lay hands on them. They can talk with them. And, of course, a dead person isn't usually lying out in the woods. That's kind of a story. So the idea is that they form a delivery service where, to make money, they'll carry out the last wishes of the dead person. And as the title suggests, this literally involves delivering them, carrying their corpse around town. Sometimes in a duffel bag, you know. But obviously, I have to avoid the attention of the authorities, because they're certainly not going to believe their story, you know, about being spiritualist. And of course, one of the challenges comes up is, how do dead people pay you? So it's like, oh yeah, I got a lottery ticket in my pocket, you know, checked out, might be a winner. Or like, oh, we can just eBay all the stuff in my apartment. So, the usually, of course, they end up making no money at all, but they end up doing a good deed, which I think is certain to this lesson there. But it's, as one reviewer said, it's actually a different kind of Japanese horror story. A lot of Japanese horror stories sort of have a kind of reactionary message where, like, don't interfere with stuff, you know, don't break this forbidden knowledge. Kurosaki's message is more, you know, get involved with the world, you know, help people. And pretty much the scariest thing in the world are living people. You know, they're much more scarier than dead people. It's kind of a anti-zombie type of thing. It's like, you know, this whole zombie stuff, why are people scared of dead people? They're dead. It's like, you know, if it's living people who cause all the trouble. Looking ahead, week of May 20th, so also maybe out right now. Volume 29 of da, 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 Berserk. Also, for those of you who are fans of Adam Warren, who was one of the very first Americans to really make a success of drawing the manga style, volume third printing of this, Power Volume 2, has come out. That's been a very successful series. As you may know, Adam Warren did a licensed adaptation of Dirty Bear and Bubblegum Crisis. The real trick with Adam was everything is fun for him up to and including where he pencils the page. After that, it's not fun anymore, like the inking and the finishing. So all we had to do was convince him that, hey, your pencils are just fine by, by themselves. So once we did that, he said, hey, I can do four pencil pages a day. So we really broke through. Let's see here. Coming out May 27th, MC Psycho, Volume 9. And thank you to everyone who is supporting that title. On the manhwa front, Volume 7 and also May 27th is The Shame Warrior, Volume 7. I'm not actually sure. Unfortunately, I'm not the editor of that title. Like any, you can always feel free to get in touch with like follow-up questions, and I can look them up for you. There are many editors of Dark Horse. Most of them work strictly on American comics. A few of them work on American comics and manga. I'm the only person at Dark Horse who only works on manga. But it's funny, because the guy who edits MVP Cycle also edits Conan. So I suppose that's somewhat appropriate. He also edits Blade of the Immortal, and we got into a whole Monster vs. Conan debate. It's rather interesting. It wasn't, it was a little bit more refined. It wasn't like who'd win the fight, it was more like philosophy of life. So, this isn't one of those, Spartan versus Ninja type thing. The whole idea that, Spartan versus Ninja, Spartan versus Ninja, who would win? I'll tell you who would win. Like, cut to a shot while Spartan's lined down with a throat cut. That's who would win. But, coming out June 3rd, we also have our Domo color changing mod. I'm sure you've seen that, some of our Domo merchandise, the Sorcerer. And also on the manly manga front, Gantz Volume 5. And on the not quite so manly manga, right after Gantz, Oh My God, is Volume 12. So. Well, Keiichi is a real man, he's just rather subtle about it. Though Nanny is very hard. She is pretty, you don't want to mess with her. It's easy to make fun of Oh My Goddess. I'm the ninth editor of the series. It's like Spinal Tap and all those drummers. and one of the things in the back of Oh My Goddess Colors is I go into length thanking all the previous people who worked on it, because over 15 years, you can imagine, there's been a lot of letterers, translators, and so forth. Actually, the person who translates Oh My Goddess is doing it all this time, pretty much. She's the head of the Japan Society of San Francisco, Dana Lewis. She's former editor of Newsweek Japan. So she's pretty high-powered. We have had everyone from, college students to, again, Newsweek Japan editors edit our stuff. My wallet is not only filled by manga, it's also made of manga. As you can see, this is Asari-chan, which is a manga that a lot of Japanese know, which has never been published here. But anyway, I was one time I was checking out Trader Joe's, just in my neighborhood, and the guy at the checkout counter started translating my wallet. So it turned out that he was translating manga doing Guru Ponchan. So I think I don't read one of that. And he asked me, I told him, hey, well, I work for a manga company. So he translated Mail by Kasui Yamazaki. And that's one example of how you need translators. Another time I was, I may have mentioned this to the editing manga panel, someone came up to me at a convention with her resume and all that. And the person who usually translated one of my titles got sick. I needed a quick pinch hitter to do the other rest of the volume. And she stepped in, so I kind of sort of took a gamble, but it worked out fine. So that's cool. I was able to give her professional credit. Generally speaking, I prefer to work with people who I'm familiar with, if only because I get very nervous about deadlines and so forth. And you want to be pretty sure that this person's going to meet, so not everyone doesn't always work out, and as editor, your number one responsibility is to get out on time. So get out on time with high quality, but it's your job to make sure that you can do that on time. I'm segueing a little. June 24th is Volume 1 of Neon Genesis, the Shinji Ikari Raisin Project, Volume 1. And I have a preview of that as well. Some of you may know about this title. Some of you may have heard me talk about it, just looking at it at every occasion at the Evangelion panel last night. Hey, what happens? For those of you who don't know, this manga is based on the famous scene in episode 26, the final episode of Neon Genesis Evangelion, which they're going through the whole instrumentality, and one of the ideas of the instrumentality is the alternate lives the characters can live. That, in other words, they don't just have to choose their life. And one of the lives is a kind of happier one, where, it's more of a love comedy. Where Misato is their teacher. They don't live such wretched lives of, horror, darkness, despair, angst. To me, as a long-time Evangelion series, and I've been a fan of the series since 1995 when it came out, it's a tremendous relief, you know, to actually see them having a bit of fun. Because, you know, I've been, you know, gay, I understand, I've dealt with the darkness, I've dealt with the death, you know, I've been there. Now can they please relax a little, you know. These are great characters, I think they do deserve a little bit more happiness. By the way, it's not just, the series, however, is not just a love comedy. One of the interesting things about it is, beginning in Volume 1, they start to sneak in elements of the original show, but they're done in a different context. For example, obviously, one of the big differences is that Yui Kari is still around. So now both Gendo and his mother, and Shinji's mother, they're both scientists. They're working at an organization. It's not called NERV. It's not called the Apparent, but it's called the earlier title, the Artificial Evolution Laboratory. And there's an organization called Zela, which is behind the scenes. And Ray is doing all these bug suit experiments, but nobody knows who they're for, because the Evangelions haven't shown up yet. So Misato is Shinji's teacher, but her father was still one of the founders of, you know, the Artificial Evolution Laboratory. So he's sort of gradually bringing out elements of the series, but bringing them out in a different way, sort of, you know, keep you guessing. One of the things that I want to advocate rather strongly about the series is the fan art section. Years ago, when I was editing the original Evangelion manga in the 90s by Yoshiyuki Sadamoto, it was published at that time as a monthly comic book. Pretty much all manga in those days was published as monthly comics. And we had letters column with fan art and so forth. And I wanted to revise that just because it's in a regular comic book instead of a regular monthly comic. That's no reason we can't have a fan section. So some of you at the panel last night, you may have seen the Gendo as Obama poster of that. That was actually the first bit of fan art that's going to be in Volume 1. So I'd like to strongly encourage any of you who would like to draw or paint and just have some kind of, you know, we're especially looking for kind of wild left field ideas like that. Or if you don't draw or paint, you just want to send in some of your comments, we'd like to put that in there too. I'd like this to be a real forum that can look to the fans. So I have some, most of these I gave out last night, but I have some excess flyers, so if I can take one, it's got the information, including the email address of our letters column. Those of you who can't get a copy, it's simply evangelion@darkhorse.com. So it's pretty straightforward. Coming up in July 8th this year, we're having a double novel by the author of Vampire Hunter D, Mr. Kikuchi. This is a double novel of Moon Maid Amnesia and Invader Summer. Some of you may recognize the first title. It was made into an anime and was released by CPM. Vampire Hunter D, of course, has been a great success as a book. And, of course, we're hoping people will be interested in Mr. Kikuchi's other more science fiction-oriented work as well. July 15th, Volume 30 of Berserk, Sun Pillow. And in July 22nd will be Gantz Volume 6. But, you know, you may have read Gantz, you know, you may have read FTD Psycho, you may have read Berserk. The Dark Horse is entering into a new realm of brutality on July 22nd. It's a title that I don't think any of you are prepared for, you know, no matter how dark and debased you regard yourself to be. I'm referring, of course, to Thumbelina. This is from the Pop Wonderland series in Japan, taking classic children's fairy tales and giving them that very special Japanese touch. And I'm sure you'll agree there are only three letters to describe this, M-O-N. And there's going to be this, there's going to be Alice in Wonderland, Little Red Riding Hood. Thumbelina's first, I'll pass it around. And you can see if you're prepared for this sort of thing. It might be the only con artist, I'm not sure. Yeah. Yeah, because your tiny is usually seen as cute in manga, but she's literally like about this size. Also, July 22nd is the second printing, I'm pleased to see, of Volume 1 of our magazine, Style School. which is a very elaborately translated, very difficult to do, book on Japanese art techniques, a magazine, actually. August 5th this year is volume 4 of our book plus novel, Towns of the Nanita. On August 19th is volume 33 of Oh My Goddess. As you may know, we switch off every 2 months between releasing a new volume, which are now in the 30s, and releasing a previously flopped volume on flop. Those are now in the teens. At some point, we will finish everything up. August 26th, volume 2 of the Blood Plus Adagio manga, and also volume 12 of Evenness and Endless World, which again, we very much appreciate your supporting. Somewhat, there aren't too many hard SF titles to be done out there. September 2nd is Ride of the Water God, Volume 4, again, a manhwa. We're always very careful to distinguish our manhwa and our manga here at Dark Horse. You'll see the nice South Korean flag stamped there. Well, there are some companies who try to lump everything together, and, you know, as if you wouldn't come up to a Korean and a Japanese and say, I can't tell the difference between you two, you know, you're all alike to me. Why would you do that for manhwa and manga? I mean, they don't read the same. So, obviously, you know, many manhwa are strongly influenced by Japanese artists. That doesn't mean that, you know, Korean creators are not bringing their own stuff to it. The great thing about our manhwa is they're actually translated by a Korean mother and son team. So, mother usually gets all the educated cultural stuff, whereas the son gets all, you know, the contemporary slang, so, together. September 2nd will be Volume 2 of The Events of Seven Galleon. And by then, we may be having some of you maybe in Japan on the by then. And Volume 4 of a series that I'm very glad to see people like, which is Gunsmith Cats First. I don't know why I should be surprised people like Gunsmith Cats. The only reason I am is that I would have thought it'd be too 80s for some people.
The 80s are coming back.
They are. They're kind of a 20-year cycle. So we don't have much time. I mean, pretty soon they're going to revive grunge. So I know it's a recession and everything, but like my suggestion to you if you want to make some money is like go to Goodwill now and like buy all the ripped jeans and flannel get your hands on. You'll be able to sell that for like 5 times as much in 2 years. Well, they have not exactly gone. September 23rd is Berserk Volume 31 and Gantz Volume 7. October 14th, approaching Halloween, is Volume 15 of Vampire Hunter D, Twin Shadow Knight, Parts 1 and 2. And I believe that concludes my initial yammering phase. There's actually something that I wanted to show at the edited manga panel, but I didn't have time to bring. I discussed the aspect of the idea of how we have to work carefully with paper stocks. This is actually the blank of clover. This is what clover looks like before you put anything on it. So one of the stages we do before we consider publishing any manga book is we actually get a blank from the publisher, in this case from China. So we can't really make it out here, but it begins with select pages and then goes into regular pages we use for black and white. We want to be able to completely envision what kind of papering the book is going to be on. Because after all, these manga will float in midair and have to land on paper. And Dark Horse uses an extraordinary variety of paper stocks, 30 or 40 different for our books. We have a standardized manga format, which now is about 5x7, but we're always ready to work in new formats as well. So that's something we go into a great deal of detail of. As you might imagine, Clover was rather difficult to lay out because its original format consisted of four separate 128-page volumes. But to put them all together, we had to make sure that everything was going to line up properly. And there's another issue called signatures, in which books are printed on what are called signatures. For example, signatures of 8, signatures of 16. What these mean is that the pages are not printed in the printing press one at a time. They're printed like 8 at a time or 16 at a time. And then, say, if you have that, let's say a signature of 8, that means it's a big double-sided sheet of paper with 4 manga pages. Then you fold it twice, and then it goes into the book, if that makes sense. So if you're going to have colored pages, often you have to do it in the beginning or end of the signature. It's rather complicated. So there's a lot of planning that goes into a book beforehand. We're about halfway through. Maybe there's some things that you were interested in. One of the things I've heard announced at Mongas is that we won't be able to announce anything at before the book expo, which I believe is this weekend, actually. Next week, yeah. As you might imagine, we have to coordinate our publicity very carefully with the plan. So we're quite glad to be working with them, of course. But it's a rather complicated project. One of the things that makes it more complicated, I see that, you know, Fumiko Takahashi's latest work has been published simultaneously. But our ambition is to actually, that's online, our ambition is to publish it actually physically, which my guess is a lot more complicated. Also, I'm not entirely sure, and I could be wrong, but it's my impression that Takahashi's new manga is probably being done primarily for Shogakukan, whereas Clamp's new manga is being done primarily for Dark Horse. In other words, it's Dark Horse's initiative to do it. It'll be published in Japan, too. And obviously, as is with all of our creators, they have complete creative freedom. I'm not asking them to do anything differently. Like, basically, just want to do whatever they want to do. And you can see a lot of their ideas, and it's fascinating to see them, like, think so quickly. Because we'll get all these, like, concept drawings and say, no, wait, but I'm going to do it this way. No, wait, I want to do it that way. You know, say, that's foreign, and the cost ideas back and forth. But the initiative for doing it is for Dark Horse. We've always wanted to work directly with a manga creator. And for us, it's no different philosophically from working with comics creators from around the world. There's no reason we can't work with Japanese creators, too. We are, after all, a publisher. Unlike a lot of manga companies, we primarily produce original material. So we sort of see ourselves as more like some of these Japanese companies, who, after all, produce original material. We know that manga are not made as a magic, you know, manga machine, extruded like saucer ice cream cone. Now, we know that every manga has to begin with a blank page, someone has to stare at it, and, you know, think the story and draw. Because we know that, because we do it every day with our own comics. So we would never do it as a commodity. And also, you know, a lot of Dark Horse titles are licensed and translated into other languages. So it's not a serious thing to us. At least three Dark Horse titles are available in Japanese, and Hellboy, Sin City is, I think, Hard Boiled. So we've done it that way, too. So, we care about making good versions of our manga in English precisely because we want our comics to have good versions in Japanese and in other countries as well. So we can see it, hopefully, from both sides.
Are you acting at all, like a Japanese editor, where you sometimes offer advice or suggestions on whether they plan to deal with any more creators?
I'm a little bit wary of that. I feel like going back in history and like stepping on a butterfly, like changing history. Because I like Clamp fine the way they are. I mean, you know, obviously they're one of the most talented creators in the world. So I feel funny like offering too many comments. So it's an interesting opportunity, but I want to be kind of wary about it. Also, because while I am a manga editor in America, as you say, it's a different thing from being a manga editor in Japan. Basically, what we mainly want to offer Clamp is a new perspective. You know, the ability to do this in a new way, and that itself will give them more directions, creatively, more inspiration. I don't think my Clamp is suddenly going to go into, you know, some huge sex and violence mode or anything. It's not like that. What I mean is that doing a project where it's being done for, you know, because usually they do all their stuff for, you know, manga magazines. And it is, of course, built here in Japan in some format. But logistically, it's an extremely complicated, you know, project. But we're very glad to have the opportunity. More questions? Yes, please.
I've noticed that on just various manga titles from various publishers, and with Guns of Cats specifically, back when it was like first translated into regular like American issue form. Sometimes the drawings would go right out to the edge, like it was drawn further outside the crop. Was that what was going on, or was it an error, or what's that about?
Well, I think what you're talking about is actually a fairly common phenomenon in long. There are basically two ways that you can arrange a drawing on a page in manga. Notice that this page, the artwork is entirely surrounded by border. However, on this page, notice how the artwork goes up to the edge. This is what's called a bleed. It all depends on what effect the artist wants. So there actually is more artwork on paper. There's maybe about a centimeter's worth. But if you want the effect, if you want to make sure that it's going to be cut off on a page, you have to do extra. You have to accept the fact that something's going to be cut off. So what's up here is probably just more sky. There's no actual, nothing you're really going to miss.
Because I have seen I've seen where it goes off to the side and like some of the words would be cut off.
That's a mistake.
Okay.
And that's something we try to. I think that happened more in the old days of comics because the editing methods were not as precise. I remember that used to get involved with Trice and Seth Gellin. These days we try to leave as little chance as possible. Whenever there's something that's going to be printed, we want to know where is it going to be printed, what factories that their facility is going to be printed on, what printing machine are they going to use, and who's going to be on the machine that day. We need to know all that stuff. Just like you want to know who's going to translate it, who's going to letter it, who's going to edit it. Because in the preliminary stages, when I work on this, we work with Microsoft Word files and script. We work with Photoshop and Adobe PDF with lettering. But none of that means anything because it's not going to appear in visual format, it's going to appear in book format. The only thing that really matters is how it's going to look on here. This is where the expertise of the guys and Sarah's come in. They are experts at looking at like a 1200 DPI TIFF file and saying, we're going to need to, it looks great here, but it's not going to look that great on the page unless we adjust it this way. So they calibrate it. And in order to calibrate it, this goes back to here. They have to know what kind of paper stock it's going to be on. Printing conditional materials is like an essay question. We did one manga, Kasia Tirada's The Monkey Game, Volume 1. It's a little bit unusual manga because it's full color. There may be Volume 2 someday, but Mr. Tirada hasn't finished yet. But our version of it was actually better than the original Shueisha version. Mr. Tirada told us this, and Shueisha told us this. I thought the world would end. But that said, there's nothing written in stone that says the original Japanese book has to be the best version. Because the only way you can really know for sure is if you take the original art pieces and you have them right in front of you and see the original paintings. But the problem is that it was all created with digital art. There are no original paintings. As any of you guys know who have tried to print out your artwork, the way color looks 72 DPI in your web page is not the same way it's going to look when you print out in a color legend printer. It's the same thing with this print. So I said it's like an essay question that there are different results you can get. So instead of trying to just copy the Japanese version, our head of production said, I'm going to try to do the best version we think we can get. And that's not going to be better. We brought out details that were not in the original Japanese printing. That's a level of expertise and a level of technique that I don't have. I'm not trained as a designer, I'm not trained as a layout person, but I know upstairs to let them do their work. So, again, there are all these important steps that are involved in creating the best print book possible. And it goes down, again, to the basic principle that we are, in fact, printing on paper and we are, in fact, making books. Which is a different thing from making an online manga that requires many more steps. Besides, even if you use the Japanese book as an example, when you're in the publishing industry, you know that the first book in the print run is not going to look the same as the last book in the print run. The first book is going to be darker because there'll be heavier ink at that point. The last book in the print run will be somewhat lighter. And if you have a, Volume 1 of the Chapter 7 the Hikari Shinji Raising Project, have been through 17 printings in the past 3 years. Which one is the one you should use as model? You know. So again, you have to use your best judgment. And the best judgment, by the way, doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to come up with something most wildly different than the Japanese. But it does mean you have an opportunity to maybe do something 5% better than the original Japanese, if you know what you're doing. Fortunately, people at Dark Horse do. So, questions? Yes, please.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to Enthusiast version volume 4. I mean, there's like a year and a half wait between volumes 3 and 4.
Unfortunately, we caught up with the Japanese.
That was just a thing?
Yeah. One of the problems is, we used to have a manga magazine called Super Manga Blast. Kind of ironic, if we still had it around, we might put mangas in there. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing graphic novel only, which most manga publishers do, that means you have to wait for the Japanese graphic novel to come out. And in many cases, you can't even license it until it comes out. So it would be nice if we could say, hey, we know that, you know, the next volume of Enthusiast Verse is going to probably come out in a few months because you're on a regular schedule. When we just license it now, it's not done that way. It's like you have to actually wait for the book to exist. So in other words, we can't just release the English version as soon as the Japanese version comes out. You know, in theory, we could do it ahead of time. Because we get Afternoon Magazine, which has Enthusiast Verse in. In theory, we can translate each chapter so we'd be all ready to go as soon as the Japanese comes out. But you have to wait. That's just the way the system goes. I'm hoping we can change it in the future. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, in theory, they could FTPS the digital files, but they'd still do it in somewhat old-fashioned way. They put it on a CD-ROM, carefully wrap it. You guys ever bought anything in the Japanese store? Okay, well, you know how they're into the careful wrapping and all that. So it's carefully wrapping cardboard and mark and, you know. But, you know, Kodansha is a very old publishing house. They're over 90 years old. And manga isn't the only thing they do, and they're a very respectable, you know, company. So they have a lot of, you know, they may be manga, but it doesn't mean that, like any other company, they have procedures which have to be followed. And that's fine. You know, we have procedures of our own. So one thing about Kodansha is that they always give you very high-quality materials. You know, they're never going to send you crap. And they really do care about, you know, the quality of books. Not to mention they publish Morning Magazine, which is my favorite manga magazine. And very little from Morning is put out here. Vagabond this morning. So that's the only title I can think of. My personal favorite manga is I like it so much I can't remember his name. Sal after President Sakushima. It's been a 20-year-old story about the rise of the salaryman up this corporate ladder. In case you wonder why I dress this way. But it's great because it shows what it means for manga to truly be mainstream in society. It's a manga about a corporate salaryman. It's not a parody. It's not like The Office. It's not trying to expose the qualities of the business world. It's about him seriously trying to be a good company person and do interesting things for his company and have to succeed. I don't think anyone can do a comic like that in America. Which is weird because we're supposed to be the big corporate country where, like, you know, executives, you know, get all the money and all that. And no one really respects, you know, such people. You know, but in Japan, people don't respect them as much as they used to because that recession that never ended. But yeah, I should have brought it with. There's a cover of Morning Magazine that just shows him sitting there at his desk, like, pensively in a suit. And I love it because you would never in a million years put that in an American comic book cover. No one would buy it. But you can actually sell a manga in Japan with this as an anime cover. That's extraordinary. Morning doesn't sell as much as it used to, but it still sells 400,000 copies a week, which is more than any American monthly comic does. So, Shonen Jump in Japan now, I believe, is now down, quote unquote, down to 2.7 million copies a week. It was over 5 million in the case of Dragon Ball. More questions? Yes, please.
I apologize for bringing up an older title, but whatever happened to Shadow the Star?
Well, it got put on hiatus along with the rest of Super Long Blast. We are trying to figure out a way that we can. We want to see if we can make it workable, make numbers workable. to finish up some of those series in omnibus format, sort of get them all out. It doesn't mean that we have plans to do it. It means we're trying to figure out if we can do it. Especially in the current recession, which you all may have heard of, it's somewhat more difficult to get those projects approved. But if we can make the numbers line up, the omnibus format is increasingly popular in bookstores. They're being hired at like the... not only there's so many manga coming out, they all were in individual volumes. And every individual volume had to be individually promoted, individually shelved, individually marketed. It's a lot more efficient for many people to do this big as omnibus editions. There is some question about whether we have to do them over again because, of course, the Super Manga Blast version is the flop. So there's a question about should we just finish them in flop format if people buy them, or should we do them again unflopped in order to like get into a larger audience that may not have been into it the first time? It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of the vertical titles have flopped, and no one's really complained about that. But I think vertical is selling to a somewhat different audience. Pretty geeky. Shadowstar. It's Shadowstar's still good here. It's one of those sneaky manga that makes me think it's going to be nicer than that.
Oh,
yes.
What's your favorite manga that?
I mean, it's published by another company. Probably Detroit and Old City. My really good friend who is Kid Fox edits it, so I just have to give that an endorsement. But there's a lot of great manga out there. That's just off the top of my head. It would be nice to have done Genshin, but it's hard to say.
There are manga from Green Light, or
you know, one of the weird things, I mentioned that I was the only editor at Dark Horse who really works on manga. Everyone else works on either all comics or at least some comics. They've got a different situation because when they make a pitch that we should do a book, it's for books that don't exist yet. In other words, the comic doesn't exist unless they bring it about. They have to, you know, bring the artist and writer together and so forth. But the books I work on, they all already exist. So I don't get quite so upset if we can't make the book happen, because at least I know it exists. I mean, I can still enjoy it in Japanese. And I have suggested books which were famous failures, like Satsuma Gishinen, which I'm always, you know, using as an example. I'm not sure why Satsuma Gishinen failed, but then again, I'm not sure why Logan Wolf and Cub succeeded. And don't take that the wrong way, Wolf and Cub is great, but my logic, so-called quote-unquote logic back in the year 2000, was that this isn't going to succeed. Who's going to want to read a manga with a bunch of crusty old samurai? There's no cute girls in it. It's too small. It's glucose size. No one's going to enjoy it. You know, it's 28 volumes. No one's going to stick with it. I was completely wrong on all counts. Lone Cub sold over 1 million copies and still are our best-selling title. But if people would embrace the 70s samurai classic like that, why didn't they embrace the 70s samurai classic like Hiroshi Arata's Satsuma Gishinen? That's only 5 volumes. Yukio Mishima was a fan of this, you know, that's how hardcore it was. The guy who actually disavowed himself, you know, wasn't just cosplaying, he actually did it. But, look him up sometimes, fun fellow. So there are certain manga that part of my responsibility as an editor is to not lose Dark Horse money. Because after all, every once in a while I look at my paycheck and it occurs to me where it actually comes from. It comes from Dark Horse making money and not losing money. So we are not, Dark Horse is a privately owned corporation. We are not a subsidiary of major Japanese publishers like Viz. We are not part of major entertainment movies like DC. We're a pay-as-you-go company. Our books have to make money. As I said, DC or Marvel, technically they would never have to release a single comic book if they still have the cash flow. Why? Because they own all these characters. And they own all the merchandise, you know, that comes off it. You know, DC owns Superman. They own Batman. Dark Horse, you know, our most famous characters, they're owned by their creators. which is fine, because that's what we wanted to do, so they wouldn't get ripped off the way creators were in the old days. But it also means that, you know, we have to make money on our comics. So I may have a title that I really like, a manga title, but I can't actually in good conscience recommend it, because I have reasons to doubt it's actually going to make sales. So that's part of my responsibility, too. There may be a title which I think is really good. It's nothing against the title, but, you know, it would not be responsible for me to seriously recommend that Dark Horse do it. Comedy DMZ is probably one of those. And Friends of the Young King R is a magazine that sells things. But so I don't think it'd be a big hit here. It's about, if you go to Comedy, it's a convenience store. And basically it's about a Japanese convenience store which for some reason is set up in the Balkans. A demilitarized zone full of savage, you know, war crimes and genocide. But all the different sides might come together in PMZ to buy their, like, you know, combos and all that. So recently they had a story claiming that this convenience store has been there since World War II. And, like, they had a flashback for, like, the Russians and the Nazis were clashing, but, like, stopped it, you know, and get their combos. And, like, it was great grandparents of all the characters look exactly like the characters. I think only a country that hasn't fought a war in 65 years can do things like that. I don't know if you've seen Maritan. Maritan is the Moe version of Full Metal Jacket. It's, basically, it's the whole, you know, training sequence for Full Metal Jacket done with, you know, cute girls. You know, they're still spouting the same dialogue. You know, you're the lowest form of life on Earth. You know. And you guys know about Afghanistan? Right. Well, a lot of nations in Central Asia ended Sankh, which means land of. So someone realized that technically that means they also all ended Khan. So why can't they all be cute little characters? So it's a guy who's doing these four-panel comics. He's seriously trying to explain Central Asian politics through the form of Moab. So Afghani Khan is a little girl in a burqa. Fortunately, a burqa, you can still see her eyes, so her eyes are really big and cute. And she's really poor and clumsy, and always being picked on by larger powers. Her big sister is Russia, you know, Bernaysima. And, you know, the British push her around, the Americans push her around, you know. And, so, in these little four-panel strips, they try to inform them today's otaku about these serious, you know, political issues. And again, I think, I don't think Japan is, like, foolish for not having fought a war. They may actually be the smart ones. You know, but again, I think only a country which doesn't take seriously the idea of going to other countries with a gun and all that probably produce these kind of things. I don't think we in America could actually do comics like that because it's just too far from our actual experience. We're fighting actual wars all the time. Why, that's a very good idea. So, yeah, by the way, there are things that we're going to do in the future that I can't tell you about yet.
Aww.
Yeah, so, like, this is not it. It's like, in many cases, you remember how I said, like, you can't begin the process of licensing the manga until the manga actually comes out. It doesn't mean that we're not going after stuff that we can't handle yet. It also doesn't mean there isn't stuff that we don't have the rights to do now, but just the signatures have been countersigned and all that. So, you know, I'd like to say that we're going to announce that I can't, or that we're going to do. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah. So, how do you guys get a lot of the stuff you have in Japan? Do you guys just have, like, a subscription to all the different manga stuff that comes out every week, or do you have people who are over there that send you stuff, or, like, how do you get your mountains and mountains of stuff to sift through?
There are mountains, and it's a combination of ways. Several times a month, I get a big cardboard box full of manga, containing manga magazines and tankobon, and they really do fill up my office. You really go by the cube of foot. This explains why Japanese don't collect manga. In other words, they don't collect. Whereas Americans save the comic books, which they cut out every month, Japanese don't save the magazines. They throw them away because they fill up their little spaces. You know, there's six tatami mat rooms pretty quick. So actually, I can see the cubic feet, like every month, like several cubic feet. It's like a three-dimensional Tetris game. And eventually it's reduced to a little animal trail or a wood. That's made my way. Yes. I do actually end up getting a lot of magazines away. The problem is that I have to do the local cons. Like, I can't, this weighs a ton. So I can only, like, in Portland or Seattle cons, like, I'll bring, like, big rolling carrier full of magazines, stuff like that. So that's one way. Like everyone else here at Kinokuniya, you know, we buy stuff. We have publishers, you know, pushing stuff on us saying, hey, check this out, it's really cool. And in one case, there are things that we may have been fans of, like Satsuma Ishigen, a model that we've known about for a long time, like do. There may be cases where a company lost a license and then maybe it becomes available. With the case of Foo Fighters and Heart of Darkness by Seiko Takazawa, it was Imanaka's sister who came up to us saying, he said, my brother made this really cool manga. And it was really cool, and no one had heard of this guy in the U.S. So, yeah, there's all kinds of things. Questions? Yes, please.
Well, you said you can't talk about it, so you're going after it. Will you have your stuff to announce at AX and Comic-Con?
I don't know if we're going to be at AX. We're definitely going to be at Comic-Con. So I'm pretty certain we're going to announce some stuff there. Dark Horse, again, is mainly a comics company. We are, I think, the third largest comics company in the U.S., but maybe fourth largest in terms of manga releases. There's Viz, there's Tokyo Pop, there's Del Rey, and there's us. We do have a tremendous advantage, though, that we do come to conventions and panels. But generally speaking, if it's we tend to go to more comics conventions than we do to manga and anime conventions. I think we only go to about 5 or 6 manga anime conventions a year. We're going to more than just to, though. Like, I don't even think we went to Expo for the first 15 years we were doing manga. We just had our 20th anniversary of manga. Our first manga we published was May of... Yeah, so it was last year, 1988. May of 1988 was Godzilla, sorry, Gojira. By Kazuhisa Iwata. That was his adaptation of the 1984 Godzilla movie. That year was called, I think, Godzilla 5. Right after that, we had Outlanders by Joji Tanabe, and we've never looked back since. More questions? Shinjuku, I believe, is coming out in April of 2010. We have done a number of art books by Yoshitaka Amano, who I'm sure doesn't need an introduction to you. But previously, all of our art books had a translation to art books that appeared in Japan. This is different. This is the first time we've used the original Amano art book that has not appeared anywhere. As a matter of fact, our version may be translated to Japanese. It's a collaboration with a Hollywood screenwriter group by the name of Mink. Mink is part of Quentin Tarantino's group, Band of Art, Lawrence Bender, Tarantino, and all that. He hasn't directed any films, but he's done a lot of music videos. Anyway, he's a big Amano fan, like everybody else. And he had this idea of kind of hard-boiled sorcery set in the year 2020, about 11 years from now. Basically, what if a Yakuza decided that it wasn't enough to have earthly power, he wanted to have spiritual power too? Basically, gangsters start studying black magic. Yeah. And so there's this guy who's a former, you know, U.S. Army Ranger or something. He lost his sister years ago, thought she was dead, and then one day he gets a postcard out of the blue. Turns out she's somewhere in Shinjuku. So he wants to see if he can find her and drag her out of whatever trouble she's in. And when he gets to Shinjuku, he finds he's running into these Yakuza, you know, who are basically trying to unleash hell on earth in the name of, you know, more profits and criminal control. So, Amano was originally, he translated this into Japanese, Amano liked it, and said, okay, I'm going to do 20 paintings based on this. And they said, no, I'm going to do 40, I'm going to do 60. He sent us 100 paintings. And the concept really put him on fire. And so, this is going to be a very nice book. I think it's going to be kind of square bound. It'll be about the size of an old LP jacket, almost like 12 inches by 12 inches. We're very excited about doing it. And again, sort of like we're doing original project with Clamp, this is our first original project with Amano. And as a comics publisher, we feel very right by doing this kind of thing. Yeah, one question. Please.
With like bookstores, you know, cutting down on shelf space, you know, because of the economy and how they're doing. How's your relationship with like direct market and bookstore buyers been over the past year?
I'll just take that moment. I should ask at this point if everyone will please start to pass back all those books, the clover. Oh my God, it's colors. You're not laughing at me, it's my name. And the pronouns, we do need all that stuff back, so. Any skills? Right, okay, very promising. Every time we do a manga, we sit down with the booksellers. Let's say I've got Oh My Goddess 532 in Japanese. We sit down with people with orders from Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And even before it's translated, they can see a lot about how it's going to be. And it'll tell us, well, we're going to order so many thousand copies based on that. One reason we've been on this format is because, as you said, there's a shelf space problem. And what have we got? Probably. Hey, is there one volume of this out there? Okay, it says, great. Cool. Yeah, you need that packed up. I'm sorry, because I have to get ready for the next panel. Even though an omnibus collects stuff that's in four different volumes, it actually takes up less room than four volumes by itself, because it only has one cover. Amazon, by the way, has been our biggest uptake in manga sales with Amazon. It's really quite dramatic. Part of it is, of course, the advantage that Amazon has. They're not a brick-and-mortar store. They don't have to maintain warehouses. The nice thing about Amazon is that they're also more friendly to the more sanctioned titles, stuff which may be, you know, issue trapper. So some of the mainstream bookstores are going to order that. So you're getting into a thing which is very complicated, but we definitely try to pay attention to what the bookstores want us to do, because after all, it's where people buy the manga. Well, I have to get out for the next panel, but I want to thank you all very much for coming here.